What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast. I have some really good news. I just passed 1,500 listeners. Podcast has been growing like crazy. I remember my first big goal was 100 listeners. I just wanted 100 consecutive or 100 steady listeners that listened to every episode. We've blown past that. It took a few more years after the 100 to get to 1,000, but now it seems like we're finally starting to get some really steady growth. Huge shout out to all you guys. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please rate it. And if there's an episode that you really enjoy or you think one of your teammates would like, just send it to them, share it to them. I've got a lot of great episodes in there. I've done well over 400 now. There's an episode for everyone in this archive. Now, I've got three things I want to talk about today. Obviously, I want to talk a little bit about UFC 300. I want to give some picks. I want to talk about game development because I have reiterated a very important lesson to myself recently. And I want to start, though, by talking about ADCC versus PGF because I have been seeing a lot of people that are saying they're super excited for the PGF. And I've even seen people say they are more excited for the PGF than ADCC. And that has been received with some backlash. I've seen people like, look, you're absolutely insane if you think the PGF can measure up to ADCC. There's no way. Now, look, guys, I think that the PGF is better than the ADCC. The only thing ADCC has going for it, it has two things. It's got the history and it's got all the different weight classes. It is super cool to see a bunch of different brackets going down over the course of the weekend. But if it was just one weight class, just, hey, ADCC, 170-pound brackets going down, or the PGF is going down, I would much prefer to watch the PGF, and I think the PGF is a much better show and a much better format. Now, let me explain. I've been watching a lot of Nicky Ryan recently, and I have watched his match with Hinato Kanudo from ADCC multiple times, a lot of that due to Hinato getting ready to compete for the PGF, but it's also just a great match. I think there's a lot to learn from that one, but it is phenomenal. It's one of the best matches from the 2022 championships. Nicky Ryan looked great. Started off looking very impressive, gets the takedown, takes Hinato's back. Hinato ends up escaping, and he ends up taking Nicky's back and scoring, and he beats Nicky on points. But again, it's just a great match. But Nicky has received so much hate from that, and a lot of athletes do, because you go in, and all of us have these athletes that we're excited to see for ADCC weekend, and then when they lose first match, it's like, dang, like, there's so many guys they lose. Half the field loses their first match, and you don't get to see them again. And it's disappointing. And for athletes that are going in with a lot of hype, like Nicky Ryan, who a lot of people have called a prodigy, and obviously he's Gordon's brother, so he has a lot of expectations. So the fact that he lost to Hinato Kanudo, a guy that a lot of people don't really know much about, they're like, man, he's overrated. He's not as good as we think he is. A lot of people have said he doesn't deserve to be in this upcoming ADCC. I've seen a lot of people like, man, I can't believe Mo invited Nicky again. Yes, he got second at ADCC East Coast Trials, but he should have had to win a trials to earn his spot. And I just think that's ridiculous. Nicky is one of the 16 best under 170-pound grapplers in the world. Now, I don't think the ADCC format is the best, like, for him rule set-wise. But just imagine, guys, if Nicky had 11 more matches. I think we would see the best version of Nicky. Nicky's the type of guy where I don't think he does the best in these one-off matches. I think he needs to get comfortable. I think he would do much better in six-minute matches. And if he had three a day over the course of 4 days, I think we'd see that he is one of the top five under 170-pound grapplers. I just don't think he's the best at competition. Now, that's where the PGF shines. It really showcases the athletes, and the best athletes rise to the top. And if you lose a match, you have 11 more matches to make a statement and prove that you're one of the best guys. And I've seen so many guys start off slow, and they've gone on to have fantastic PGF weeks. And that's what's awesome about the regular season. And while obviously ADCC is awesome, so many times though a guy will lose by like a bad call or ref's decision, like Isaac Michelle. I thought Isaac Michelle beat Wagner Roach, and a lot of people do. Wagner ends up getting the decision, and Isaac's week's done. And he was like one of the guys I was most excited to see. I'm a huge Isaac fan. Loses first round, we're done. But with the PGF, we would have got to see him 11 more times. And that's why people are going to fall in love with the PGF. And that's why I really do believe by the end of 2025, it will be the premier grappling show. I like the rule set, but I don't even think it's that. I think it is just that you're going to get to watch your favorite athletes compete 12 times. Even if they don't do very well, you're still going to get to root for and kind of see your favorite athlete's storyline grow and just be told throughout the course of the week. And it's just a great way for the fans to really interact with jiu-jitsu and to really get to know these guys and get to see a lot of their matches. And especially now, like, hey, I really want to like watch Nicky Ryan, study Nicky Ryan. Imagine you got to watch him for 12 matches over the course of a week, plus hopefully another 3 matches for the playoffs. Like, that's 15 matches to study. Most guys don't do 15 matches in 2 or 3 years. I mean, Nicky's definitely one of those guys. I mean, Nicky Ryan probably hasn't done 15 matches in 3 years. And so if we could convince him to do it, it's like, man, now we've got an hour plus competition footage of Nicky Ryan. So I'm super excited for this upcoming season. I really do think this season is going to be the best grappling event of the year outside of ADCC. And like I said, the only reason ADCC beats it right now is just because it has so many brackets going on. Obviously, when you've got the 66, 77, 88, 99, 99 plus, that's 5 men's brackets plus 3 female divisions. I mean, that's tough to beat just because of all the brackets, but I'm telling you, people are going to be blown away by the PGF product. And I'm telling you, I think after this week, a lot of athletes and a lot of people are going to be buzzing about the PGF. Game development. Guys, I have had a very important lesson kind of reiterated to myself, and it's something I talk about all the time with my athletes and students. Sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. But I'm pretty adamant about building your game around solid fundamentals and very like high percentage movements. Every school has students or practitioners that are a fan of the weird. They're a fan of the outside the box movements. They want to work on the Hindu routines and the buggy chokes and all of that stuff, the crazy new worm guards and all of that. And you'll have students, they'll come to you every week with a new Instagram move, and they're wanting you to like, what's your opinion on this? Hey, I've been drilling this. And they're a blue belt, and you're like, look, you would spend your time much more wisely if you just picked a movement or a system that was already had tons of success at the highest level of competition. If you just studied that and added it into your game, I guarantee in the long run, your game is going to be better for that. Now, I say all of this because I kind of fell into this trap. I have been watching a lot of the PGF athletes, and I've been trying to catch up on Daniel Sadler. Daniel Sadler is a guy I wasn't really aware of. He hadn't really crossed my radar. You guys kind of know that I've watched less and less jiu-jitsu over the past 2 years. It's been a lot more MMA. I still catch the major shows and I know all the big names, but some of these guys on that kind of the outside of the top 10 and 15, I'm starting to become unaware of. And Daniel Sadler was one of them. Watching that WNO event where he flying triangle, flying armbarred over top of Max Hansen's guard was one of the sickest highlights I've seen in the past year. It was such a beautiful movement, perfect timing. And I've seen a couple of other guys use this in the past. Obviously, Davy Ramos won an ADCC championship over Lucas Lepre doing a very similar movement. And it's a movement I've always wanted to try and add to my game. Well, 2 weeks ago, recover from the back injury. And I feel like whenever you take like 10 days off or a couple like weeks off from training, you come back with just like a very open mind. You haven't been doing the same movements. You've taken a break. So your mind, I feel like, is free to explore and do new things. And the thing I was thinking about from watching the PGF and Daniel Sather being on my mind was that flying guard pass into the triangle or armbar. And I drilled it a couple of times. First time I tried it live, it was on a purple belt at our gym, and I hit it. And I literally stopped rolling. Like, I didn't say anything or anything. Like, right after, I did literally one round, tried it, and I was very hesitant because it is a flying move, and I was like, man, I don't want to, like, land on the dude or, like, something crazy happen. And so I was kind of dancing around at the base of his guard, you know, on my feet, just getting the nerve to do it. And I finally just committed. I was like, I just turned the brain off, ended up hitting the triangle, and I just walked off the mat. I was like, I'm done. I was so happy. And any of you guys know, the first time you hit a movement, especially a movement that you think is super cool and that you've, you know, you've seen and you've thought about it, it is like opening up a present on Christmas Day, at least for me. I'm telling you, I could not stop smiling, but I just left. You know, I didn't celebrate and, you know, rip my shirt off or anything like that. I just got off the mat and I was like, man, I went over, sat down, and just thought, I was like, again, I'm not going to do anything better than that tonight. I'm good. I'm very, very happy with myself. And I thought about that movement all night. I literally went to sleep, and I swear to God, guys, I am not making this up. I had a dream about trying that movement. Now, in my dream, I couldn't perform it. I just couldn't find the timing. I feel like I could see it, but I couldn't do it in my dream. But anyways, the next couple of times I rolled, my whole goal was to hit this movement again. And while I did hit it a couple more times, I had tons and tons and tons of failures. And this is the lesson I want to tell you guys. Is this is a movement, right? And some of these moves, and this is one of them. When done at the right time, it works. It works all the way up to the ADCC championship. But if you're going to try and make a movement like this, the A part of your game, like this is my A game. This is like what I'm doing. This is all I'm hunting for today. It's very, very low percentage, and the more you try it, the lower percentage it becomes. It's one of those movements I feel like you do once or twice. You try once or twice a rolling session. It's not high percentage. Once somebody kind of feels what you're trying to do, especially if you hit somebody with it once or you like just get a good attempt off, they're going to be super wary of it. And anybody, I mean all the guys from white belts on up, after I tried it the first time, they all were super like cautious of it. They were playing way more knees to chest. They weren't reaching with their arms. They were way more wary to play sit-up guard. And I feel like then I was kind of wasting my training session still trying to force it and go for it. You need these type of movements. You need these unsuspecting kind of special movements where you're, you know, again, they're kind of one-off moves. You're going to try once in a round, and then, you know, if it's there sick, you just won the match. But again, if you're like, nah, like this is like, I'm telling you, I was so happy when I hit this move. I was thinking like, okay, I can't wait. I'm going to hit this move a bunch of times. And I forgot my own advice. This isn't a movement I can spam and try 50 times a training session. If you guys have ever listened to any of my developmental podcasts where I'm talking about developing your game, you guys know I'm very keen on really keeping track, like mental note of the percentages of a training session. Like if I attempt to move 50 times in a training session, which would be insanely high, if I only hit the movement once, that's incredibly low percentage. You typically want to get your movements 50% or higher. Like you really want to have a really sharp sword. And anytime you draw that sword, you don't want to do 83 strikes to get the kill, right? You want to do one shot, one kill. One stroke, one kill. Two strokes at most. And the more strokes you use and the more misses you have, like, man, it just, again, it kind of shows that like either that movement, you're not very good at that movement, or it's a low percentage move. And so that was something I really had to like kind of take to heart again and think about like, okay, I'm spamming this movement clearly, and I could just feel like I'm shooting it at the wrong time. After I do it once, everybody's really, really aware of it. It's then putting me in bad positions, or I'm making mistakes trying to go for this movement. We need, like, this needs to be like a D, E, or F move, right? It is not the A game, not even the B game. It's just a movement that's going to work on a particular opponent at a particular time. And while I think, again, it's super important to have, like, in the game, like, and there's definitely going to be times that, man, you're going to be able to catch somebody. I'm going to be able to catch somebody really, really good with that. It's not something I need to spend hours upon hours drilling and perfecting. And I would caution you guys, you know, there's certain things, like, you need moves that you're going to be able to hit on your training partners once and really catch them by surprise. But you need to always just be honest with yourself about the percentage of the movements you're hitting. And I see this with, like, the buggy choke. Some people make the buggy choke their identity. And the buggy choke is a pretty high percentage move. And especially if you consider just like, hey, it's a really good movement when you start mixing it in with your escapes, just using it to create distance. People are scared to kind of get chest to chest. And so you can go ahead and put your guard back in. But I see a lot of guys, we have two or three in the gym I'm thinking of right now, where I'm watching them constantly, and their default is like, all right, buggy choke, buggy choke, buggy choke. And their percentages are so low now because everyone is expecting it. And when people are expecting the buggy choke, it's pretty easy to defend. But when you watch a guy like J-Rod or the Rutolos, it's not their A game. It's something they're looking as like their C, D, or E, or even F option. And they're throwing in on the back door, and they're throwing it in crazy positions. But it's not like, man, the Rotolos are going to pull bottom side control in every one of their matches. But I'll see guys, they'll just pull bottom guard, and they'll let people pass to try and get to the buggy choke. And it's like, man, that's just not going to work, especially against anybody blue belt or better. So there's certain movements that you can just force, right? Like, you can literally pass the half guard into the mount and force back takes. That's something you can force. You can tell your, like, your training partner that that's what you're going to do, and you can get good enough, and that could be your A game. And you could do that continuously. There are certain things that you can do that. But some of the, again, these specialty movements or these kind of like weirder movements that they're just something that, like, you want to have as, like, your D, E, F, you know, options, not even your A and B options. It's funny. One of our guys, his name's Jackson, and he's a purple belt at our gym. And he was telling us, he's like, hey, he came into my office because Brandon was in there. Brandon was actually getting ready to leave. And Jackson was like, hey, I think I invented a move. And anytime one of your guys say that, you get pretty skeptical. Even Brandon was like, look, we'll see. I'm sure there's, like, it's probably already out there. You know, it's very, very rare to actually invent something. Well, Jackson goes out there and he shows us something. I can't even really describe it. I mean, it was essentially like it's hard to even describe, but he showed us a movement that, like, I never had really seen before. At least for me, like, I would go, oh yeah, man, like, I've never seen that before. Maybe you invented something new. But his question was, like anybody that's just invented something, that's like, hey, how practical is this? Is this a good move? And so one of our other purple belts, or actually two of our purple belts, got on top, or excuse me, they got on bottom, and they messed around. And so they kind of just troubleshooted it. Me and Brandon watched. And I'll say this, the movement worked the first time, every time on the person. But as they felt it more and more, it became easier and easier and easier to stop. And so Brandon kind of gave him some advice, and then I gave him some advice. But when I was thinking back, I was like, this is exactly what I'd say. It's just like this flying triangle that I was doing. This is a movement I could for sure see working. I could for sure see working once in a match. Maybe once a week. If you roll with the same person a bunch of times, in the course of a week, if you tried this movement every single time on them, after the second or third time, it would stop working. But if you just add this into your arsenal, because he was doing this from top half guard, like if he added this into his top half guard game and just kind of made it where he was doing it, like, again, his D, E option, like he was like really focusing on like his different passes, his twister passes, his no hand passes, his knee slices, his back steps into the honey hole. And then this was like the other thing he did. I could 100% see it working. But if he was like, no, this is going to be, I invented this move, this is going to be my primary game, he's going to fail with it. He's not going to have a lot of success. And here's the thing. People, you might be listening now, go, how do you know that? If he truly invented this move, what if he spent the next couple of years working on it, getting super, super good at it? What if it is truly like, what if it's an unstoppable movement that just needs some tinkering and tweaks? And I would say, I don't know, right? I can look at a movement. I can feel a movement. I can make guesses about how valid it is and how successful it will be when you're talking about going and using it against higher level opponents. But at the end of the day, nobody ever knows. I remember the first time I saw the buggy choke, I was pretty skeptical. Then Cade Rutolo hit it on PJ Barch. Then Craig Jones and J-Rod used it to win the West Coast trials. I was like, look, it doesn't matter what anybody thinks. The buggy choke is super, super legit. And so I have been wrong. I could be wrong in this move. But at the same time, so many people, I've just seen it, so many guys spend hours and hours of their training time working on some of these, again, funky moves, and it really hinders their development. And so you just have to know that that's the risk you're taking. And so if I decided, look, I'm going to become a master at this flying over the guard triangle choke thing that Daniel Sadler did, I have to know that there's a chance that I waste a lot of my training time working on a movement that never becomes high percentage. And if you're okay with that just because you want to add cool moves into your game and just be known as the guy with the flashy moves, then by all means, go ahead. But I have always been about practicality and working on movements that work at a very, very high percentage. And I stress that to all my guys. Like, man, that's to me the best way to build your game. In the long run, you're going to be very, very happy that you spent hours working on your knee slice passes and your back takes from the turtle guard and from the mount, rather than, you know, guys that are like, I'm going to spend all day on all my hours working on like the Hindu routine or these like crazy other things. And while the Hindu routine's a incredible movement, you know, there's definitely a couple of guys that are phenomenal at the Hindu routine. I've also seen it really hinder guys' progress and make their game very, very easy to beat because they had to spend all this time on this freak, like freak move. You know, I'm using quotations on the freak move. Because to make something like that super, super high percentage, you've got to spend most of your training time there, which makes the other parts of your areas, other parts of your game weak. And yeah, that's just not what I recommend to my guys as a coach. UFC 300 is tomorrow, and this is arguably the greatest UFC card of all time. I've been listening to breakdowns all week. I'm super excited. I'll tell you the fights that I'm most excited for. There's three that really stick out to me. Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway. Charles Oliveira versus Armin Sarzukian. I mean, that's an insane, insane fight. Those are definitely like the two fights that I'm most excited for. And then obviously Alex Pereira versus, you always got to be hyped for the main event. Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill is also a crazy fight. I'm taking Alex Pereira. I just can't see Hill coming back from one of the worst injuries you can have, a torn Achilles. Knowing that Pereira is one of the best leg kickers or calf kickers in MMA. And I've heard tons of people say this. I know I'm probably beating a dead horse. I'm sure you guys have all heard it, but I just can't imagine if Hill eats a couple of those kicks, how's that leg going to hold up? And so I feel like Pereira's winning this pretty easily. I think he hurts the leg and finishes by knockout in round two. I'm pretty confident about that. Gaethje versus Holloway. I think this is a fight that could truly change Max Holloway. I think Gaethje is going to go in there. He's going to hurt Max Holloway. And I think he's the first guy that finishes Max. Now, Max has never been finished, and Max has some of the most impressive fights in the UFC. I mean, he's taken, and he's been in some absolute wars. The Dustin Poirier fight when he went up to 155 for the interim title. Some of the fights, obviously, with Volkanovski. His performances against, like, Jose Aldo and, I mean, so many other dudes. He has been absolutely impressive. But I just feel like Gaethje's a different animal. And I feel like Gaethje, especially after the Vaziv fight, what he did to Rafael Vaziv and then obviously Dustin Poirier, it just blew me away. And it really shows this guy is an elite, elite level fighter. I think he's one of the best to ever do it at 155. And I, Max isn't a knockout guy. And I just think Justin connects. He hurts Max Holloway, and I could see this being a fight much like the Tony Ferguson that changes Max Holloway, where it's like, man, Max is a different fighter after the Justin fight, because that's just what Justin kind of does to dudes. But I think that's fight of the night. I mean, right, like it's easily one of the fights of the night. Charles Oliveira versus Armin Sarzukian. Everybody's picking Armin. I'm a big fan of Armin, but obviously I love Charles. And I think Charles beats Armin pretty handedly. What's Armin going to do? I think Oliveira wins this fight wherever it takes place. I think he knocks out Armin if it stays on the feet. I think he submits Armin if it goes to the ground. And that's saying a lot because, again, Armin's been on a tear. But I just think Oliveira, other than the Islam fight, like he is one of the top three or four 155ers of all time. I mean, I think I would put skill-wise Islam number one, Khabib two, and then Oliveira. That's easily, to me, the top three 155 fighters of all time. Oliveira, what he did to Chandler and Gaethje, what he did in this last fight to Benelli Dariush, I've been studying that a lot. Me and the guys, and I talked about it a lot with the MMA guys this week, just being able to do damage from the bottom position is one of the most underutilized aspects of MMA. And Charles is him, Tony Ferguson, are probably the two best at it. And Charles Oliveira pulled guard in that fight, and Benelli Dariush is like one of the best grapplers in the UFC, and he didn't want to be there. He was getting beat up. The elbows and just the clinch control that Oliveira was utilizing. I love, and I think it's one of the issues with rubber guard. Like rubber guard is really good at like stopping punches. It's been proven. I don't care what anybody says. The rubber guard is super effective to stop strikes, but it's actually, it's pretty hard to strike somebody. Like you need to get like, if you get like a dead orchard on somebody, yeah, you could kill them, right? You could just elbow them in the head, but I feel like you're a little too bound up in there and it's really tough to move. If you watch what Tony, or especially what Charles does, how he utilizes his guard to land strikes, I mean, it is absolutely beautiful. But so many other good fights on this card. I'll be interested to see like what fights everybody's excited for, because I mean, we're starting off with Davison Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt. I mean, that's the first fight of the night. Got Bo Nickel making his return. And I was listening to a guy, like an expert. This guy's a big-time sports bettor and does pretty well with the UFC. His picks are usually pretty good. And he was picking Cody Brundage to beat Bo Nickel. He's like, look, Bo Nickel, and it's something that he does a lot. He's like, after a wrestler knocks somebody out. So he's like, Bo Nickel just knocked out Val Woodburn. Bo Nickel's been telling everybody how much his strike, how good he is at striking, how he's been boxing forever, like his mom got him into boxing, and that he's not just a wrestler. He's like, I think he's going to go out there. He's going to try and strike. He's going to try and knock out. He's the first fight on the main card. He's going to go and try and knock out Cody Brundage to make a statement and get that $300,000 bonus that Dana announced yesterday. And he's going to try and make this fight exciting. And he's like, man, I think he's got tons of holes, and I don't know. What I mean by that is we've never seen Bo Nickel in any type of danger. He hasn't had any adversity, and so, I mean, it's easy to say, like, in the 30-second clips, you go, Bo's got huge holes in his striking. Like, who knows in 30 seconds? Like, when he's starching dudes, it's hard to say. It's kind of like Ronda Rousey. Everybody thought Ronda Rousey was – I remember when people were like, no, Ronda Rousey is the most skilled fighter of all time. And it pisses me off. Joe, this is one of the things I hated like Joe for a long time, because Joe was one of the biggest Ronda Rousey fans. He was trying to, like, Ronda's, I don't care, girl or guy, she's one, but I think she could beat some of the guys. Like, Joe was saying that. After her skill set got exposed with more and more talented women coming through the ranks, all of a sudden was, oh, Ronda has all these holes. She actually wasn't as good. Her coaches should be fine. All this stuff. And to me, it was insane. People turned on her like crazy. And I could see the same thing happening to Bo Nickel. That is just the nature of the beast. People, when you're winning, it doesn't even matter who you're winning against. I even tell the guys that. It's amazing. Like, you could go out there and beat a half retarded guy that trains out of his gym or trains out of a like his farm, and he has no coaches, and people will be like, dude, you are gonna, like, you're a monster, bro. You're a monster. And you could go out there and lose to somebody super legit. If you go out there and get stars, people are like, man, you suck, dude. Like, you should, people are stop texting you, people stop telling you you're great. Like, everyone's like, ah, he's never gonna make it. That's what they did to Ronda. That's what they'll do to you, right? That's what they'll do to any of us. It's just the nature of the beast. But I could see that 100% being known Bo Nickel. Like, he could go out there, Cody knocks him out, and now all of a sudden people are like, he was calling out Chimaev. He was saying he could beat Sean Strickland. He was saying all this. This dude, his striking sucks. He had a terrible performance. They just did that. I just did that. I talked about it in the podcast. They did it to the female. What's her name? Oh, my God. She just fought last weekend, and she comes out of the New York area. What's her name? Oh, my God. She won Combat Jiu-Jitsu. She won EBI, the female version. I can see her face. But anyways, they did that to her. She was ranked number 2. Goes out there, loses to the French lady, Marion Fiorot or whatever. I don't know. I can't say her last name. But she goes out there, gets exposed, loses every single round. I mean, she got beat pretty poorly or pretty badly. And it wasn't the best showing. And again, people are like, she looked terrible. I knew she was overhyped, all this stuff. And I'm like, man, people were saying like she was the future champ, that she was going to be the champ in the next year. Now all of a sudden she sucks. The critics, right? So I'm super interested in this Bo Nickel fight, because I thought that was a really interesting take. And I buy into the Bo hype. I think Bo finishes in the first round pretty easily, but I'll be very interested to see if it's a close fight or if Bo gets exposed. I just want to see what Bo looks like with some controversy or, with some, if he has like a really tough fight and he starts to get, put on the back foot a little bit and he starts to face some adversity. What does Bo Nickel look like? I think he's coming from Penn State. He's one of the best wrestlers in the past 10 years. I think he's got tons of grit, but you just never know. Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. There's just so many crazy fights on this card. But, let me guys know. Like, make some picks. If you disagree with some of my picks, let me know. Do you think Cody Brundage has a chance against Bo Nickel? I mean, Bo Nickel's the biggest favorite in UFC history. I'll be interested to see if any of you are picking him. Again, I am not. I think Bo Nickel starches him in the first, but we'll see. Till next time, guys, I love and appreciate you. Peace.